This is All Things Considered. I'm Crystal Sirakis. Today marks the 70th anniversary of the D-Day invasion of Normandy. It was one of the largest invasions in history as Allied forces began the liberation of the Western European countries occupied by German forces. During the invasion, more than 24,000 airborne troops dropped into France. Among them was Private First Class Philip Russell, then age 23, from Binghamton, New York. He had originally signed up for the Navy, but when the Army eased its requirements and allowed civilians to become paratroopers, he quickly changed his request and eventually was assigned to the 506th Parachute Infantry Regiment, 101st Airborne Division, the group of soldiers later known as the Band of Brothers. I visited Mr. Russell, his wife Donna, and his dog Puppers recently at his home in Kirkwood. Now 93 years old, he's a little hard of hearing, and his voice is a bit roughened by the radiation treatments he received fighting throat cancer in 2011. But he still vividly remembers the war and the moments leading up to the start of the D-Day invasion.
The night before, we were getting pretty anxious and nervous. We knew it was coming off. We were in a marshalling area on the English Channel. They put us in a hotel, like a bar underneath, and a hotel, and we couldn't leave. To keep ourselves entertained, we couldn't go down and have a drink. So one of the men used to let his canteen cup down with a fishing line and with a pound note in it, with a note, fill it up and send it back and keep the change. So we'd have fun that way, have a few drinks of beer. Along towards evening on the night of the 5th, We were very busy sharpening knives. We went out to have fire going out and back, and we would take the charcoal and darken our face. And while I was out there, I just happened to be there, and General Eisenhower showed up. And he walked amongst us, and shaking our hands and wishing us good luck. But we were very nervous. We jumped at H-hour -4, which we jumped 4 hours before they even started assaulting the beaches. And it was a night jump. It's kind of funny because I went to sleep and I took a nap on the way over. And I woke up when we started over the Guernsey Islands. We started getting anti-aircraft fire. We came to the coast of France. We didn't go over France. We made a left and went straight across the Cherbourg Peninsula to cut down the amount of aircraft fire. When we hit over France, the air was full of tracers, anti-aircraft. They were going through the plane. Some planes were bursting into a fireball and going right down to the ground. And we were so anxious to get out of the plane. I didn't need a parachute. I went out, I felt safer. We couldn't see, it was dark, of course. There was just a little sliver of a moon once in a while come out behind the clouds. They jumped us so low and too fast, 10 miles off where we're supposed to be also. But I looked down and I could see white objects moving around and around, and I'm trying to figure, what the heck am I landing in? About that time, the sparks flew. I hit the ground, and I landed in a bunch of black and white Holstein cows, and they formed a big circle around me, staring at me. So I knew I'm safe as long as they're there. Then they started to separate, and I had my rifle torn apart. I hadn't put it together yet. I challenged him, and it was turned out to be my buddy. He came in, and we got our rifles, and we started walking. We went up the hill a little bit. We found a road, and there we located three more of our friends. I hurt both legs on the jump because I had hand grenades in one pocket and Hawkins mine in the other. And I hit hard. We crawled in the bushes and took a nap till got daylight. And at daylight, we started down the road. We come to crossroads and met two or three other troopers. They joined our group. And so we went on down the road to a crossroads at Rivonneville. It was a sign for the town. We turned left, and there was a man, a Frenchman, with a camera, taking our pictures. We didn't get a chance to talk to him. We didn't understand French, and he didn't want to be around in case the Germans found us. So He took off. We never said anything, but we spent in the ditch. There's a ditch along the road. We got in that ditch and set up a line of defense so we could get together. There were a lot of GIs there, but they weren't from my outfit. They were mostly officers. I never see so many officers in all my life, commissioned officers. I know one of them said, "Never before has so few been led by so many." That gave us a chuckle.
Off target, in pitch-black darkness, Russell and his fellow soldiers hunkered down near where they landed.
We stayed there during that day. The Navy started shelling us because we weren't supposed to be there. And the shells come in and they land in the field. The dirt would go way up in the air. So we burnt orange smoke pots, which was a friendly color. And they lifted their fire. They stopped shooting. I'm glad that worked. We had a small house there that we kept our injured. Anybody that hit was there. I spent the D-Day night there. The next morning was D-Day plus two, and the landborne troops started coming into town, the far end of town. We sent a patrol down to contact because they know we were friends, because that's a dangerous situation. So along about, on D-Day plus two, my platoon leader come down the road at the crossroads, and he had maybe half a dozen of my buddies. So we joined up with him. We headed towards St. Maria Gleese. On the way to St. Maria Gleese, my commander got hit in the chest, and he was evacuated. That took care of D-Day plus two.
Russell was a first scout. As he remembers it, it wasn't exactly the job he thought it might be.
When I was a kid, actually, I used to listen to Daniel Boone on the radio, and he was an Indian scout. So they needed a scout, first scout, so I volunteered. And I would go into the woods on a scouting expedition and I'd play it right to the hilt. I wanted the job. You know. I'd send back reports where I found a cigarette butt or something, you know, made it look good. Well, they gave me the job. And then I found out that the object of the first scout is to draw enemy fire. But we didn't. We only used a scout to remove a large amount of troops. And that happened on the way to Carentan. Carentan was a heavily defended city. So we had a large amount of troops gathered up, a whole regiment. I never forget. We was getting ready to go down the road. It's just a straight and narrow and flat land. You see a long ways. And I can still hear the word scouts out. That means I'm going to start. I started down the center of the road. It was Macadam Road. When I get about half a mile away, or as far as I could visually see, the second scout, he started out. Then when he got as far as he could see from the advance party, they started out. They had a group of men with heavy power. Then as far as they could get, about a half mile or so, came the main body. So we were there to protect them so they didn't get ambushed. I went about 5 miles, walking every step that I thought was going to be my last one. But for some reason, I wasn't afraid. I just kept putting one foot ahead of the other and kept going. At about 5 miles, I went down a slope. It curved to the right, went down to a swampy area. And once we rounded that curve, I don't know what had happened before we got there, but there were houses were burning, there were dead animals all over, and dead Germans, some of them blown right in half. And down about a quarter of a mile was a canal, there was no bridge. I stopped, and I held up the second scout, and he held up the main body, of course. And second scout come up with an officer, and I reported to him. He told me to go back and bring up the advance party. And I think he felt sorry for me. But I went back, got the advance party, and brought him up. He had taken Heddle, my second scout, up. A man had started firing at him. They went up to wipe out the sniper's nest. And the 502 coming up on the right flank, they were after the same sniper, and they see Heddle, and they shot him, killed him. So that officer saved my life, I think.
By September, Russell and the 101st Airborne was in Holland, part of Operation Market Garden.
I was up in Holland, and the Germans, we jumped 16 miles behind the front line at Eindhoven. It was a thin, narrow corridor up into Holland. We had opened up, and the Germans kept cutting it off. And the tanks were all over the place. And they attacked us one day. We had a pitched battle. And I was there, and my company commander, Al Hazenthal, came through. And he looked mad. And he watched me stop and stared at me. Just stood there and stared. I said, uh-oh, he don't like where I'm at or something. I said, where do you want me, sir? He said, stay where you are. And he walked off. And all those years, I thought he was mad. I couldn't think what I did. You know, the year before he died, he told me, Russ, he said, one day over in Holland, he said, we were fighting the Germans. He said, I didn't think we were going to win. He said, I thought they were going to drive us out. He said, I walked up to your position. You gave me a big smile. You said, where do you want me, sir? He said, well, I felt better after that. I told him, all these years I thought you were mad at me. He said, no. He said, I felt better because you smiled at me.
Russell and the 101st continued their push through Europe. In December, Russell fought in the Battle of Bastogne, part of the infamous Battle of the Bulge. Later, he was part of the assault on the Eagle's Nest in Berchtesgaden, the mountain retreat of Adolf Hitler. There, the men of the 101st Airborne learned of the war's end. And a few months later, Philip Russell, by now a sergeant, returned home. In 2004, he returned to France, when he was honored with the Legion of Honor Medal. Only 100 World War II veterans have received this honor. Even though it's been 70 years since D-Day and the days of battle and war that followed, Russell, like so many veterans, still wrestles with the memories of those events.
I still have problems. I don't like to go to bed at night. I have to have some protection. I have to protect my wife, my family, my home. But I had many years a problem. I didn't know what it was. But I got things straight quite away. We handled them. And every day I have memories that come to me. I think of things that happened. Good times and bad. Some memories are pretty good.
I want to say thank you for talking with me today, and thank you so much for your service. Yeah.
I'll think of a lot of things after you leave, I should have told you.
I can come back later.
Okay. After the next 70 years.
More than 4,000 Allied soldiers were killed and thousands more wounded on June 6, 1944. There were many more stories that Mr. Russell shared that we couldn't include in this broadcast piece. You can hear those stories and see photographs on our website at WSKG.org. To those of our greatest generation, thank you for your service. For WSKG, I'm Crystal Sirakis.